At this moment of the 21st century, America's slave legacy and racial history and the Confederacy have all abruptly emerged into an active conversation about what is America. Suddenly, in New Orleans, statues to Confederate generals Robert E. Lee, P.G.T. Beauregard, and Confederacy President Jefferson Davis, along with an obelisk marking the Battle of Liberty Place, have reacquired meaning as symbols of hatred and white supremacy. So when an anonymous donor stepped up with money to remove the four monuments and the New Orleans City Council voted 6-1 to proceed, the obelisk commemorating the Battle of Liberty Place was brought down. There was relief in some quarters, but also protests erupted. Then around 3 a.m. just this Wednesday, another monument was taken down. Jefferson Davis, cast in bronze and mounted on granite, pulled down with a crane and crated off to an undisclosed city warehouse. Michael Tisserand is a New Orleanian and the author of Crazy, George Harriman, A Life in Black and White. He joins me now from WWNO in New Orleans with some thoughts about history being stirred up.
We have such a rich history, and we just completed the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival season here, which reminded us of the great, joyous, integrated art that we've created together here in New Orleans. And then you have these statues declared by the city council as nuisances that really represent a very short time frame following the Civil War, when the sons and daughters and the fans of the Confederacy got together and tried to reclaim, I guess, the last threads of their pride after having lost this battle, and started erecting these monuments. And I believe that Mayor Mitch Lander and the city council rightfully recognize these as relics to a time that don't necessarily need to be cluttering up our most public and visible civic spaces.
And what's the pushback, and who have participated in these protests?
There's been an effort over several mayoral administrations and several generations to better deal with these monuments, especially the Battle of Liberty Place monument, which was erected in 1891, about a battle in 1874, and when the White League forcefully regained control over the city, over the mixed-race city and state police forces. Some of the pushback, some of the real visible, more disruptive pushback you've seen in pictures, certainly has been people coming from other states that seem to want to go to Confederate monument to Confederate monument to protest this thing. Louisiana's open carry, so some of those folks were waving shotguns or automatic rifles around. So it was really disturbing, especially close to public schools. But then there's certainly a local opposition as well. And I know friends of mine, I did not grow up here. I've lived here for about 30 years. Friends of mine that did grow up here talk about white friends, talk about seeing these as just beautiful landmarks that make their city distinct. And there is an emotional attachment, especially, I think, to the Robert E. Lee statue in Lee Circle, because that, along with the St. Louis Cathedral or the Superdome, kind of defines our skyline. You just think of it as kind of this benign, sort of lovely presence of this guy folding his arms facing the north.
These monuments no longer have a neutrality. They you know, and the Confederate flag is a good example. And this is something that was removed from the State House in South Carolina. And that was perceived ultimately as proper. Is this the same kind of narrative?
I believe so. Certainly that is what Mayor Mitch Landrieu said inspired him. He said that the Charleston church shooting sort of made him take a second look. Also, a conversation with New Orleans-born jazz musician Wynton Marsalis, in which Mayor Landrieu said that conversation kind of opened his eyes to these statues that as a kid he drove past and never really thought too much about. And I have to say, for the longest time, I thought Lee Circle and the big statue of General Lee was sort of a quaint, historic relic. And not until conversations with black friends in New Orleans did I start to see it through their eyes as well.
Certainly these monuments celebrate the Confederacy. They don't remind us of the blight of slavery and the the oppression that went on during that war and preceding that war. But is there a danger of forgetting history altogether with the removal of these monuments?
I think we've forgotten history with the erection of these monuments, with the establishment of these monuments. You know, I go to this park, Palmer Park, which is pretty close to my house on the corner of Carrollton and Claiborne. It's a beautiful urban park, and it's been reclaimed by the neighborhood recently, and I go there for crawfish boils, and I go there for an art market every month. And it wasn't until writing this piece that I found out it was named for Benjamin Palmer, who was a minister to the Confederate forces and gave a famous 1860 sermon on Thanksgiving that was credited with inspiring and moving forward the Louisiana secession from the nation. And the sermon was about the Christian duty to preserve and to defend slavery. And in 1902, this was it was Hamilton Square, it was formerly called, was renamed Palmer Park to try to bolster that legacy, to try to bolster the sort of emotional attachment to white supremacy and white dominance that was also being rolled forward in the courts with Plessy versus Ferguson establishing separate but equal and other rollings away of the idea that blacks should be 100% civilian, should have civil rights, should have the rights of all. So I think there's been a great amnesia about the meaning of these statues and these park names and these street names and these school names that's kind of settled over us in New Orleans now, especially over New Orleans whites. And I think a lot of the pushback is sort of a resentment about waking up from this amnesia. What I would love to see, you know, when you go to Birmingham, when you go to Memphis, there's these world-class, really wonderful and incredibly educational civil rights museums. And New Orleans could do that too. We were the leader in the 19th century civil rights movement, again, leading to the Plessy versus Ferguson challenge, in which a lot of the same techniques that were adopted in the 20th century civil rights movement got their start in Treme and in New Orleans. And we were the first black-owned daily newspaper. The New Orleans Tribune was located here. It was such an active time. Abraham Lincoln received two Creoles of color into the White House, who handed him a petition signed by 100 Creoles of color. So we have such a huge history of civil rights, both in the 19th and 20th centuries here, that I would love to see these monuments moved into that type of institution, where they could be seen for what they really are, which is sort of speed bumps on the very rocky road towards civil rights.
Well, thank you so much, and happy Jazz Fest.
Thank you. It just ended, but the jazz continues.
Michael Tisserand, New Orleans, and the author of Crazy George Harriman, A Life in Black and White.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.